Gallery, it is time for Meet Me at the Diner, and today my very special guest, Solicitor Jerry Peace, right here in Greenwood. I tell you what, it's that time of the year where we get back to business as normal, and Jerry, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Ann. It's a pleasure to be here.
It certainly is good to see you, too. God, interesting weekend last weekend, huh, with the politics.
It was. Politics is strange, is it not?
It is. But just wanted to mention that because, God, it is all over. And, of course, you know, isn't it strange that we had all those ads and all the robocalls and everything, and then Sunday came and everything stopped.
Quiet.
Glad to be out of the radar for a little bit, huh?
There you go. All you have is the analysis.
All you have is the analysis. You are right. Well, you know, as solicitor, you constantly are being barraged by all kinds of things out there. You know, I was asking you before we came on the air, do you ever get to leave your job as solicitor?
You don't. You know, when I go out to speak, I tell people I'm a solicitor 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I'm not just saying that. This is a job you cannot leave.
I understand that. I understand that, but it has to be tough.
It's tough, but it is enjoyable. I think I'm where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, of course, you were a JAG officer, right?
I was for 20 years.
Did you get to leave that job? As a job? I mean, did you get to leave it, or were you constantly with it?
Well, I mean, it's still kind of the same thing because you have cases and you have responsibilities, but it's much harder in this job to walk away and try to relax. It was easier in the Army.
Easier in the Army, yeah, okay. Good to hear that. Now, just for the record now, for those that don't know, Jerry, what area do you cover?
Well, you know, the solicitor is the district attorney, the chief prosecutor. We prosecute criminal cases in the counties of Abbeville, Greenwood, Lawrence, and Newberry.
Why is it called a solicitor here in the South?
Well, they say it's based on the English system, but I don't think anybody really, really knows why. But we're the only state that calls its primary prosecutor a solicitor.
You know, South Carolina always stands out, don't we?
We always try to be different.
We do. So what exactly is your job? What do you do?
Well, I mean, we're responsible for trying the criminal cases in the four counties. That's our primary responsibility. It's gotten bigger as time has gone on. We have other responsibilities. We have intervention programs. We have a worthless check program. We have drug court, and we have many other things that we do. Since I've been solicitor, we've also expanded into magistrate's court for DUI and criminal domestic violence prosecutions. In the past, the solicitor's office in our circuit, because we're a small to medium-sized circuit, never had attorneys going down into the lower courts.
And that's why you have actually had to ask for more money from the state to be able to continue to prosecute in the magistrate's court.
That's right. I mean, money is always a problem. And several years ago, the solicitors, as part of our budgeting process, asked for money, especially for DUI prosecutions and CDV prosecutions, and we were appropriated funds to do that, and we used that money for 2 years, and then with the budget cuts, that was the first money to go because it was magistrate's court, and of course our primary responsibility is General Sessions Court.
But you've seen a lot of good positive things coming out of being able to do that.
Yes. There was a study that was released, I think, 2 years ago that showed that the CDV crime rate was down significantly. And we think part of that is because that we had prosecutors in those courts. Now, when we lost the state money, our prosecution commission was fortunate enough to receive a federal grant, and it's a 3-year grant. Unfortunately, that grant runs out on June the 30th, and of course, I have two prosecutors who I pay for that grant, and I'm kind of scrambling to see what I'm going to be able to do when that grant runs out. With DUI prosecutions, Department of Public Safety obtained a grant, and we're presently in the second year of 3 years on that grant.
So, and when you say CDV, you're talking about criminal domestic violence?
Criminal domestic violence, that's right.
Absolutely. Well, so this is why that you went before the state to ask for money to be able to continue that program.
That's right. That's right. We've asked for extra funding to replace the funding that
will be lost.
Was lost.
Have you heard any word on this?
No, and it is part of the budget process, so we'll probably be sometime in March or April before we hear.
And June 30th is right around the corner.
June 30th is right around the corner, that's right.
Da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na. All right, well, I certainly hope that goes well, because I know that it has been found that that is helping with criminal domestic violence, basically because a woman doesn't have to say, oh, I don't want to prosecute now.
That's right, that's right.
So, that's a tough spot for a woman to be in, isn't it?
It is, and we find in probably 90-95% of the cases, at some point the female victim will come in and say, look, I want to drop the charges, and I want to drop the charges because that's not what really happened. You know, no, I he didn't hit me in the mouth. I tripped going up the steps and fell, and they do anything they can do to get those charges dropped.
And then 6 months later, they're back there again.
Exactly. And, I mean, it's one of the most dangerous things that we deal with. And we have a pretrial intervention program. And if you go into the PTI program for CDV, then you're required to take a 6 months batterer's course.
Batterer's course?
That's right.
I've never heard of a batterer's course.
Yeah. And because it's so volatile and it's one of those things that can blow up, I personally approve anybody who goes in the PTI for CDV.
Wow. Well, that's very interesting. And, the thing about it, all of these things are happening like from our childhood and everything. It's hard to break that cycle.
It is hard to break the cycle. But that's one of the reasons for the batterer's course. And we have met with some success and having people go through the PTI program. But, of course, you know, as the one making the decision, your biggest fear is that you approve somebody to go in pretrial intervention to go take advantage of this batterer's course, and then they end up severely injuring or killing the victim of the CDV.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
What do they do to them in this batterer's program?
Well, I mean, it's a 6 month course of counseling and trying to
change their mind.
Exactly.
Change the focus in their brain.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know whether we actually
gave
them some of their own medicine. All right. Uh-huh. Well, sounds like a great program, Jerry. But we're going to be talking about all different aspects of what happens when someone is prosecuted for a crime. That's what we're going to be talking about today. You know, if you have questions, Jerry loves to answer questions, so you can give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Gosh, Jerry has been our solicitor since November of 2004. And before that, he was in the solicitor's office since 1997. So you have a good handle on what goes on in Greenwood.
I've been here a while, and I know the ins and outs, and I think we do a good job. We've got some really dedicated, passionate, hardworking people. Our lawyers average over 600 cases per year per attorney, and that's among the tops in the state.
And, you know, the thing about it is, though, that makes it difficult is they're not paid a lot of money to do this.
They are not paid a lot of money, and that's one of the problems that we run into. Many of the young lawyers coming out of law school have educational debt.
Mm-hmm.
And the debt, their loan payments are anywhere from $350 to $1,500 a month. And so what happens in many instances, they will come and work at the solicitor's office because they know that they can get outstanding training, and they will stay for 2 or 3 years and then go off and make money so they can pay their loans. And that's happened to us. I had four people leave between May and August year before last. And among the four of them, they handled 2,600 cases. They were all passionate about it, but they came and said, look, I like working here, but I can make more money over here. And they are.
And you can understand that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the solicitor's office is not unlike the Army. In the Army, we would have individuals come in and do their 2, 3, or 4 year obligation. And they would come in because they knew that they could get excellent training and they would be more marketable after that training. And it's like that in the solicitor's office. You have many people come in, and they want to get the training and get the marketability and go out and be able to make money to raise families and pay those debts.
Pay those bills. That's right. Hey, we are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. You are on WLMA 1350 AM. Let's hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll be taking any questions, 229-7984, and talking more about what the solicitor's office does. Don't you go away.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Back here at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 Bypass. We are talking with Solicitor Jerry Peace right here across the table from me. Hey, you know what? The sun has finally decided to come out here. Gosh, looks like we are going to have a beautiful day here. What is the weather out there? It's right at 50 degrees. The sun is shining. We are looking at a high of 65 today. Low of 40 degrees, and tomorrow lots of sunshine, high of 64. So enjoy this weather. Get out there and go for a walk. See the beauty right here in Greenwood. But we are here with Jerry. We're talking about the solicitor's office, what he does, what happens. And, of course, it's a tireless job. We were just talking about the attorneys that work for your office. You were just telling me you had 4 attorneys that were just great, but they had to go on and make money someplace where they could make money and afford the things.
That's right. Like you said, among the 4 attorneys, they handled 2,600 cases, which is a tremendous number of cases, large number of cases. But there are 4 individuals who had law school loans and just couldn't afford to work at the solicitor's office any longer than they did.
Now, one of the things I think people always have a question, you just brought up the 2,600 cases. Your lawyers handle about 600 cases per year. That's a tremendous amount. Can justice be served?
Well, I mean, it can. I mean, put it in perspective, the national standard for a prosecutor is 250 cases a year. They say if you handle 250 cases, then you've had a good year. And so that puts it in perspective when you're handling 600 cases a year. I mean, you're working hard.
But I mean, can you actually make the best decisions for the justice system?
Well, I mean, you have to make the decisions that need to be made. I mean, we get between 6,500 and 7,000 cases a year in the circuit. We have 60 to 62 weeks of court a year. The standard for a good week of court is 100 cases. And so if you have 60 or 62 good weeks, let's take 62. That's 6,200 cases, so you already know that you're starting the year in the hole. And so that causes you to make subjective decisions. I mean, disposing of a case is not magic. You can't wave a magic wand and come up with the right answer. It's not a situation where there's a mathematical formula that you can use, or you can put the information in a computer and have the computer spit out the right answer. I mean, it's a subjective decision. And so you evaluate the case, and you take a number of factors into consideration. I guess one of the major ones, is it a violent crime? I mean, we're in a situation where we need to concentrate on the people we're scared of, not the ones we're mad at. And so we concentrate on violent crimes, and we think that anybody who commits a violent crime should go to jail for as long as we can send them. Mm-hmm. Now, in making these subjective decisions, you take the crime into account. You also take the victim's position. We want input from the victims. We have a saying in the office that we treat victims like family. You know, they've suffered some injury, and we're interested in their input. And we also want law enforcement's input, because they've gone out and they've made the case. They've been out there at 3 o'clock in the morning in the rain, sleet, snow, heat, mosquitoes. And so we want to have their input. And so we take this input and then make the subjective decision. And, over the time I've been solicitor, we've handled over 40,000 cases. You can't handle over 40,000 cases without making somebody mad.
Sure.
You know, I kind of joke that there's not a decision I make that doesn't make somebody mad, but you want to make the best decision and the decision that gets you as close to justice as you can be, because the bottom line is prosecutor's duty is to do justice. And I know some victims get mad and law enforcement gets mad because we don't do exactly what they want to do in a particular case, but they're looking at one case. We have a wider cone of vision. We have to look at that case in conjunction with the other 6,500, 7,000 cases that we have and try to make the best decision.
Well, you know, so many times we hear where they try to make somebody plead to a case and adjudicate a case, get it over with, get it done without going to court. What's your philosophy on that, Terry?
Well, I mean, just because of the number of cases, every case cannot be tried. I mean, you want to try the cases that need to be tried, but you can't try every case, just because the trial of a case will take anywhere from 3 to 5 days. And if you're spending that time trying one case, what happens to the other cases that are on the docket? And I'll use Lawrence as a great example, because last spring we had a two-week term of court. In a two-week term, you'd like to do between 200 and 300 cases. Well, we called a homicide by child abuse case that took the entire 2 weeks. It's the longest non-death penalty case that we've had in this circuit in years and years. It took 2 weeks, so we resolved one case. Well, the other 250 cases that we brought in just sat there and got old. So it is a balancing act. You need to try the cases that need to be tried, but you also need to try to resolve other cases. And, you can't make somebody plead, but you have a general idea of what a particular crime calls for.
And what about the criminal, the person's right to a speedy trial?
Well, they have a right to a speedy trial, and they can demand
the definition of speedy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of fluid. It just depends on the facts. They have to demand a speedy trial, and once they demand a speedy trial, then the state has to try them within a reasonable time.
And what's a reasonable time?
That also is a subjective decision. There was actually a case out of Lexington County. The guy had been in jail about 10 years. And that was determined in that case that his speedy trial right was not violated.
10 years.
10 years. So I mean, it's a subjective decision. But when our objective is to resolve a case within 18 months.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, because there is so much to this, and it is not something that you can just say, hey, I can make this decision, and everything will fall into place. And I bet there's always another case popping up, even when you have a docket and have everything worked to go.
Always.
So that should be a difficult job. Hey, you know, we're going to talk more about the things going on. One of the questions that I thought would be real interesting to answer when we come back afterwards is, I like this question right here, why can't we just send every criminal to jail? When we come back, we're going to be talking about that one here with Terry Peace. He is a solicitor right here in Greenwood, and a lot more in between. So if you've got a question for Jerry while we're listening to the news, don't hesitate to call us. You can call us at 229-7984. That's 229-7984. Give us a call, and we'll be glad to answer it for you. So lots of different programs that Jerry has started. The Worthless Check program is one we can discuss when we come back. And also the program that you're getting ready to ask for volunteers to sign up for. That program is the
Arbitration Program.
Arbitration Program. So when we come back, we're going to be discussing all these issues, so you stay right with us. If you'd like to get involved in helping serve justice, you might be able to help out with the arbitration program. Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are buying gold, folks. There are gold in that hills. So come see us right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. You'll be glad you did. Price of gold right now, let's double check before we hear the news. Is it going to give me the answer here today? And the answer is, this morning, 1663. What is it right now? It is trading at, gosh, what do we got here? Here we go. Let's double check it as we go into the news here. Coming up, 1667, staying right in that zone. Come see us. It's a great time to sell. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood. I'm Ann Eller. We'll be back in just a moment.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk Radio Station.
Saturday, but it's not. It's Tuesday, and we are having a very interesting conversation here today with Solicitor Jerry Peace, and he is solicitor of our area. I know you want to talk about some different issues. In fact, we were just talking about the class that you're getting ready to have for the arbitration. Tell us a little bit about what arbitration is first.
This is actually one of our most important and successful programs. It's the Community Juvenile Arbitration Program, and it is designed to deal with kids who have made a bad decision. And like I say, it's one of our most successful programs. We have over a 90% success rate, mm-hmm. which means 90% of the kids don't go on to commit another crime. It's run by volunteers, and Dawn Puderbaugh Hodges in my office is the director of the arbitration program. And as a matter of fact, she's got some upcoming training. And we always need volunteers for this program. We have a number of dedicated, critical volunteers, but we always need more. Mm-hmm. And to be a volunteer for the program, you must be at least 21, have your high school diploma or its equivalent, and a clear criminal record. Now, the training starts February the 21st. It's from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. And if anyone is interested, they can reach Dawn Puderbaugh Hodges at 942-8843. 942-8843.
That sounds great. If you hand me that, we'll make sure we get that on our board out there, and I'll be telling people about it when I'm talking in the morning on the I Love Ann Show.
Thank you.
All right. That'd be great. But this has been an excellent program because, like you said, you've had, 90% do not come back through the criminal system?
Over 90%.
That's huge, Jerry.
It is. And the program, the individual commits a crime, and then they appear before the arbitrator, and the arbitrator hears what happens, and then the arbitrator can do a number of things. They can require an apology, require a written essay, require restitution, just a number of things to put the child on the right track.
Absolutely, and that's even where I think you get parents involved.
Exactly.
I mean, and everybody sits down and talks about that.
Right, and the victims come in, and they can meet with the victims and do a personal apology.
So it's a good program.
It's a great program.
Absolutely.
Great program.
And that was one that you started how long ago?
It's been in existence probably 14 years.
Yeah. Okay, good program. But then you also, the worthless check one has taken a lot of pressure, shall we say, off the system?
Right, yeah. The worthless check program is also an excellent program. We've had it in existence for about 6 years. We've actually collected about $1.8 million.
Why can't you use that money for that shortfall you got over there with criminal domestic violence? Come on,
well, I mean, that's a good question, but we've generated, my office has generated probably a little bit over $100,000,
mm-hmm.
and it's taken 6 years to do that, so it's not money that could sustain hiring a lawyer or hiring an investigator just because it amounts to $10,000, $12,000 a year.
Yeah. So, but this is a program that if somebody has a bad check, just tell them they can call.
All they have to do is contact my office. Phil Ray is the director. His number is 942-8812, 942-8812. And it's actually a painless program because all the merchant or the individual has to do it is fill out a form that's about a half a page, give us that form, give us the check, and we do everything else.
Yeah, we don't collect, even have to go to court now.
No, that's right. You know, we try to collect the check. If we don't collect the check, then we get the warrant and prosecute the case.
So it's a lot easier and really has made things go a lot quicker.
It has, and the advantage to the merchant or the individual is if we're successful in collecting the check, then they get the amount of the check plus the $30 administrative fee.
So there you go. This is something that if you've got one, you need to contact the solicitor's office. Seems like always after Christmas there are more that pop up. Yes, it's true. But one of the other things that we were talking about is, what are you actually the proudest about in what you have done as solicitor?
Well, I mean, I'm proud of the programs that we've established. You know, the Worthless Check Program, of course.
Drug Court.
And we have Alcohol Education Program. But I'm proudest in the manner that we've handled violent crimes. We concentrate on violent crimes, and when we go into a term of court, our concentration is on someone who's committed a violent crime and they're in jail. The quicker that we can handle those cases, the better off everybody is, the victims and the citizens of the county, because it costs about $35 a day to have somebody incarcerated in our local facility. So the sooner we can get them down to the Department of Corrections, the better off we are monetarily.
Absolutely. But the violent crimes, you concentrate on that. Now, have we ever had a time where we haven't had violent crimes?
Well, and as a matter of fact, in Green, it was unusual this past fall. For the first time in memory in Greenwood County, we did not have a murder case on the docket. It has been years and years and years since that happened. And the reason that it happened is because our lawyers were concentrating on the violent crimes and getting those cases tried and resolved.
All right. So those are good things that keep happening. What else would we like to talk about? The drug cases. What's happening with those?
Drug cases never stop.
Are we having any different drug cases, or basically the same? You know,
I mean, they're basically what has happened over the 14 years I've been here. When I first got here, you know, crack was the big drug, and we did not have any meth cases. Rarely had a meth case, and in about 1998, we had an investigator from Oklahoma came into a seminar and asked the question, "How many people have had meth cases?" And at that time, we might have one, maybe two a year. And he said, "Well, hang on to your hat, boys, because 5 years ago in Oklahoma, we didn't have any, and now we have as many meth cases as crack." And lo and behold, 5 or 6 years later, what happened in the circuit? We had as many meth cases, if not more, meth cases than crack. We didn't have any fewer crack cases, but we had more meth. I mean, it's a scourge.
It is.
We're lucky that we have law enforcement agencies who want to concentrate on this. They want to get the drug dealers off the street, and they do an excellent job of focusing on getting the druggies off the street. And here in Greenwood, we're extremely fortunate because the city and county work together, and they have molded a unit to go out and deal with this problem.
That should make your job easier.
Well, it does. It makes it easier because they're passionate about it. They want to do a good job. Now, that doesn't mean that we can be successful in every case, because every case depends on the facts. And a good example is that if you go to a house and you serve a search warrant, or you go to a house with a warrant because somebody's making meth and there are four or five people there, and you arrest four or five people for manufacturing meth, and one person comes up and said, "Look, I was doing it. These guys were just there." Well, I mean, we can handle the person who says, "Hey, it was mine. We did it." And the other four we have to let go. And, of course, sometimes that makes folks mad. Well, wait a minute. You only got one, and four or five were arrested. Well, I mean, there's a reason for that.
Absolutely. You are supposed to be fair in this justice thing, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a prosecutor's job is not to get a conviction. A prosecutor's job is to do justice. You know, we have a quasi...
Are you sure it doesn't show it that way on TV now? Now, come on now, Jerry.
Well, we also never get a case tried in an hour either, so...
Darn, okay. Well, what is happening with drug cases, people that are convicted? You were telling me they've changed their philosophy a little bit on the state level.
They have. I mean, it's actually pretty incredible because there were a number of drug cases that had mandatory penalties that you had to go to jail. A couple of years ago when the Department of Corrections was having a budget overrun, this group out of, I call it a pinhead group out of Virginia came down and did a study and talked about having, you know, drug addicts in jail, not drug dealers, and talked about having too many nonviolent offenders in jail. And as a result of this study, the legislature changed the law, and now a number of the drug crimes that had mandatory penalties now can get probation. And you see a number of them getting probation.
And that's because of
exactly.
Coming down and saying we don't need to put them in jail.
Yeah, and this group came in and said, look, you have too many nonviolent offenders in jail. And I was chairman of the Prosecution Commission and president of the Solicitors Association, and so I testified a number of times. And my testimony was, hey, look, when you talk about nonviolent offender, the operative word in that term is not nonviolent, it's offender. Because many times that offender has had three, if not four, bites of the apple before he even goes to jail. The first time we probably put them in our pretrial intervention program. The second time they get probation. The third time if they did probation okay. The first time they might get probation. So it's the third or fourth time before they go to jail.
They should go.
Well, yeah. I don't know many nonviolent offenders who have not earned the right to be in jail. That's where they should be.
Earned the right to be in jail. Well, maybe what we need is a nonviolent community that we can put them all in, kind of like they do in Arizona with the tent community.
That might not be a bad idea.
All right. Well, we are here with Solicitor Jerry Peace. Let's hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we've got more to talk about. Don't you go away.
Tuesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday.
Gold dust at my feet.
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
We're back here at Sharp Passage Gallery on the 72 Bypass. We have Solicitor Jerry Peace with us here today. We've been talking about all the things that go into making a case, making it happen, how it happens. We had a call from Jamal Brown. He said the arbitration is certainly worth it while keeping kids from either going to prison where they learn how to be really a thug or a crook. And he said, you are appreciated, Jerry. I guess you don't hear that too often,
well,
do you?
Thanks. I don't hear that a whole lot.
So you're in a tough spot any way you go. But, you know, it's a job and somebody has to do it.
That's right. I mean, it's where I think I'm supposed to be.
Well, good for you, Jerry Peace. Good for you. But we were wanted to talk a little bit about victims. You know, it's got to be a tough job to try to get justice, and really what we're supposed to be talking about is justice, and how do the victims get satisfaction, shall we say?
Well, I mean, as I said earlier, we have a saying in the office, we want to treat victims like family. You know, victims are extremely important in the criminal justice process.
What do they really end up in the end?
Well, I mean, it just depends. I mean, it just depends. They've had the misfortune of being victimized by a criminal element that could care less about them. You know, these criminals don't care what they do to victims or how it impacts on the victims. We're fortunate in the solicitor's office. We have victim advocates who are passionate and care about the victims, and they try to make this walk through this judicial system, criminal process, as painless as possible.
And I think, like TV, we just expect that, you know, justice will be served and you'll feel better about it. But just sending somebody to jail doesn't always really satisfy. If you've had something stolen from you, are you going to get it back?
Well, I mean, it just depends. Sometimes you do, most of the time you don't. In many instances, restitution is part of the sentence. But quite frankly, restitution is kind of a joke. You know, most of these defendants have been through the process before. They know that if they're on probation and they have to pay restitution, if they don't pay it, they're probably not going to go back to jail just because they didn't pay it. And I mean, that's unfortunate. So many victims just face the frustration or suffer the frustration of not getting their restitution and having it converted to a civil judgment at the end of the probation period.
And still, they're probably not going to end up with a lot.
Exactly. Now, we are fortunate. We have a victims fund statewide that can pay a number of expenses if there's been injury or something along those lines, but it doesn't pay for property that's been stolen.
Sure, absolutely. Now, what about, and of course, sometimes a victim would like to see that somebody be locked up forever, and of course, the justice system is actually bound by what the crime exactly is.
Well, I mean, if you're a victim, you want to see that person go to jail as long as possible, and the maximum punishment is generally not too long for them to go. But like I say, we have to evaluate the case. And it's pretty easy to get a warrant. The standard for a warrant is just probable cause. Mm-hmm. But the standard to prove a case is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And so as a lawyer, you have to evaluate that case, and you have to make the subjective determination. Okay, if I take this case to trial, am I likely to get a conviction? And if you think that you're not likely to get a conviction, you start negotiating and you try to get as close to justice as you possibly can.
So it's not just because this happened that this is what's going to happen.
Exactly, and TV has made it more difficult, you know, with Law and Order and CSI and all those programs. And I tell the story about the murder case in one of the circuits where there was DNA, the defendant's DNA at the scene, and they try the case, and it comes back not guilty. And the prosecutor goes to one of the jurors and talks to him, and he said, well, you know, there was a boot that was introduced that has some dirt on it, and we were concerned because that dirt wasn't analyzed against the dirt at the scene. And the prosecutor says, well, wait, what about the DNA, the defendant's DNA? And the response was, DNA? Everybody got DNA.
Well, that actually, I mean, not to get into this, but the Casey Anthony case, that came into that on that case because they weren't able to prove stuff the way they can prove it on TV.
Exactly. I mean, it was proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And like I say, it is just probable cause to get a warrant.
There you go.
Causes problems.
We just had a call from Darlene Shirley. She said she was grateful for the courtesy she was shown, even though she was a mother of a guilty child. The compassion was shown.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, we try to treat everybody with compassion. A number of the folks that we deal with, especially the defendants, have done something stupid. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I started the alcohol education program, because normally it's a situation where the stupid kid gene, you know, kicked in, and you deal with it, and you deal with that particular behavior and hope they learn from it.
Absolutely. So a lot of good programs have been started. What would you see futuristically, other things that could improve what is going on in the solicitor's office?
Well, I mean, we could use some funding. I'm one attorney short of the minimum that I need to you know, handle the case backlog.
And why don't you have one?
Well, I don't have it because I don't have the money. You know, we've had the 3 years before I was solicitor, we averaged 5,100 cases a year. My first 3 years, we averaged 6,100 cases a year, followed by 65, 69, and last year we had almost 6,800 cases a year. So we've had an unprecedented increase in the number of cases. Our funding has been impacted by budget cuts, and a great example is at one time we got $137,500 for victim witness programs in just in this circuit. That was cut in one fell swoop.
Now, not there.
It's not there. It's gone. And we also have received budget cuts, you know, 5% here, 10% there, and that adds up. Now, we have gotten grants, and we've done things with grants to try to supplement the funding, but we don't ever feel comfortable with the amount of money that we're going to receive because we're a government agency, and just like the counties and cities and every other agency gets cut, I mean we've been cut also.
So will that impact your ability to serve justice?
Well, it impacts the ability in the sense that if you don't have enough prosecutors, then it takes longer to get cases to court. And the longer it takes to get a case to court, the further away from justice you get.
Well, there you go. This is important stuff, and we've been listening right here on WLMA. Terry, anything else in those last 30 seconds that you'd like to say?
Well, yeah, I appreciate the support that the people have given, the support to the office. I always say I'm a solicitor 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. My cell phone number, my personal cell phone number is 993-0751, 993-0751. If anybody ever has a question about a case or about anything about the solicitor's office, they're welcome to give me a call. I need to be able to articulate what we're doing and why we're doing it. And if there's a case that's not handled right, then I need to be able to correct that problem before it becomes a systemic problem. So I appreciate calls.
Absolutely. Hey, you have been listening to Jerry Peace on WLMA right here in Greenwood, South Carolina. Jerry, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Ann. I really appreciate it.
All right. This is WLMA right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.